Well, thanks, Sandy, and thanks to the whole Shore family. It's really quite an honor to have been asked to say a few words about George from my vantage point. Betty did ask me to keep this as lighthearted as possible, and I'm going to try to do that, but I have to admit to some sadness that George isn't here to take in these well-intended reminiscences and a few friendly digs, and to fire back with his customary flair and his command of the English language, which was considerable. I think you can see it reflected in Sandy's hypothetical title for this this gathering of bombs, boats, and bamboo, as I recall. So that's a conversation that we can't have, and it's my loss and ours. I guess I first came into contact with George not long after I arrived at Scripps in 1973 as a very junior scientist, and I soon thereafter began to serve on our Marine Operations Committee, something that I've kept on doing for lo these many years. And that made for a lot of years of seeing and hearing George in action on matters related to our ships and our seagoing enterprise long before I ended up following him as Associate Director for Ship Operations and Marine Technical Support in 1991. I learned a lot of things from this long association. I learned that somewhere on this planet there's an emporium of low-cost Hawaiian shirts in sometimes various garish patterns, apparently the sole source provider of George's daily wardrobe. I'll have more to say about this low-cost trait of his in a moment. I learned that he had a phenomenal memory for detail. One could raise almost any topic in a conversation, particularly on anything bearing on research at sea or on Scripps or the university in general, and George would have some interesting added fact or aspect to chip into the conversation, sometimes to chip in at considerable length. If you launched one of these conversations against a looming deadline, say the end of the lunch hour at the Scripps snack bar, you'd better have an exit strategy in mind, or you might be delayed for some time. But the details and the information that he had and that you didn't were really things to savor and tuck away in memory. I remember them fondly. I learned that he didn't suffer fools gladly. There are lots of people who don't suffer fools, but not so many of them have George's keen eye for who the fools actually are. George was really sharp on this score, and so his arrows generally hit home. And I must say he was an equal opportunity scourge. A fool was a fool, whether it was a lofty Scripps professor, somebody in some federal agency, a local bureaucrat, or whatever. He didn't play favorites in that regard. Did I mention low cost? I vividly remember early on in my time at Scripps having to go to some ship-related meeting in Washington. It might have been at NSF in the old days when NSF was downtown on G Street, and consulting George about whether he knew a convenient, reasonably priced hotel nearby. Big mistake, he did. This flea bag was somewhere in the right region, McPherson Square area, as I recall it, and its low price was richly justified by its very down-market amenities. There was a door to the room, but I had to move a piece of furniture to secure it. There was a bed, but it squeaked and squealed at every movement during a sleepless night, and so forth. I'm hoping this place has long since been torn down. That would be a big step forward for Washington urban renewal. But I didn't never return to find out, and I certainly learned not to use George for hotel referrals. I learned that because of his great command of detail, he knew our ships backward and forward, and he knew the finances of their operations and their equipping almost down to the last nut and bolt and the market prices thereof. And because of this, he could hold his own and then some with anyone, including Scripps directors, who thought that they knew better than he what ship operations really should cost. He may have been the only person on this planet to be able to argue such points successfully with the formidable NSF program manager for ship operations, Dolly Dieter. I certainly never achieved his level of skill at this kind of fact-based budgetary wrestling, try as I might. He knew perfectly well that there were times and places to spend really serious money to ensure safe and effective operations. But he also knew, did I mention low cost, that there were some expenses and expenditures that were perhaps nice to have but not essential, and those kinds of expenses quickly met with his red pencil and his gimlet eye. In 1990 or 91, it became time for Scripps to propose for numbers 2 and 3 of the new Navy Agor vessels, the first of which had already gone to the University of Washington. I headed up this proposal effort, but I concentrated my attention on the parts of the document that were related to scientific rationales and research program plans. George really took the lead on the parts that described our operational record and our expertise, our port facilities, and matters of that kind. When it all came together, the Scripps proposal took first place, the result being the research vessel Roger Revelle. George is due as big a piece of the credit for that result as anyone. In particular, it was his idea to generate two very simple pie charts demonstrating that University of California scientists, mainly but not exclusively from Scripps, accounted for a very large share of the national total use of large ships, and thereby creating a strong rationale for Scripps to receive one of the two new ships in replacement of the older ship Thomas Washington. To make those two simple charts, I believe George had to go to the physical paper files at NSF and leaf through several past years of ship use records. There wasn't any forwarding around of Excel spreadsheets back in those days. And those charts, which appear up front on page 4 of that proposal, are perhaps the two most telling illustrations in the entire document, and creating them was George's idea. It was his educated guess from his broad knowledge of national ship usage that those numbers would be favorable to the University of California, and it was his diligence in mining that NSF data that demonstrated that this was indeed the case. This boiling down of significant message into two pie charts on one page was emblematic of another type of economy on George's part, his economy in writing. His memos and his similar documents were generally masterpieces of succinct, precise wording. I think a lot of people of George's generation, disciplined by the effort that was involved in typing and making carbon copies long before the age of computers and word processors and Xerox machines, tried for similar brevity, and George was as good at that as anyone I know. Once the competition for the Agor vessels was settled, Director Freeman exercised his no good deed goes unpunished prerogative and persuaded me to step into George's position as associate director since George was planning to retire. I'm going to always be grateful to George for the smooth way in which that handover took place. I had all the information and history and status of matters in progress that I needed from him. He was always just a phone call or an email away if I came across some question on which I needed his input or his recollection or a copy of his old correspondence. But he never intruded, he never tried to force fit me into his particular mode of operation. It was a model handover, and any success that I had as associate director was built on that good foundation. Sandy, in his email letting some of us know about his father's passing, wrote, quote, "We will miss him. He was a good friend and colleague and a hell of a dad." Obviously, I can't speak to the dad aspect, but I can vouch for the other point. He was a good colleague and friend, and we will indeed miss him. Hawaiian shirts, cheap hotels, sea stories, the whole package. Thank you.